Coming up on Tech News Today, is Facebook Home a threat? Also, Apple takes on Pandora. Microsoft guy says you just always should be connected, or you should deal with it. Plus, search for your dreams. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, April 5th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, Samsung Galaxy, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT4. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the top tech news, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Samsung expects operating profit for Q1 of 2013 to be 8.7 trillion won. That's about $7.7 billion U.S. That's a 53% increase over 2012. So why is that troubling for some analysts? Well, because it would break a string of five straight quarters of record profits for the Korean giant. The good news is the Galaxy S4 pre-orders start April 16th, so there's hope for a good Q2.
CNET is citing two people familiar with negotiations that Apple's close to striking a streaming deal with two of the major music labels that's better than what the labels currently get from Pandora because they'd offer new revenue streams in addition to a per-stream rate. This includes a way for consumers to buy a song that they hear, potentially boosting download sales from iTunes, as well as a revenue share of new audio ads that Apple is planning to add into the free service.
According to a leaked memo published on Business Insider, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos has invested in Business Insider. The memo penned by Business Insider founder Henry Blodgett says the company raised $5 million with a significant investment from Bezos. Blodgett then posted an official announcement about the deal on the deal after his memo was leaked on his own website.
Wow.
According to a March 29th filing in San Francisco federal court, Google has challenged a demand by the United States government for private user information related to a national security probe. Electronic Frontier Foundation believes this to be the first time a major communications company has pushed back against the national security letter. The challenge comes 3 weeks after a federal judge in San Francisco ruled that NSLs, national security letters, which are issued without a warrant, are unconstitutional.
T-Mobile subscribers can now pre-order the iPhone 5 in the 16-gigabyte, 32-gigabyte, and 64-gigabyte models in either black or white. The new contract-free, subsidy-free plan gives buyers a couple choices. They can pay the full non-subsidized cost of the phone up front, or they can contribute a small down payment and then pay off the full cost in the form of 24 monthly payments of $20 each. So the 16-gigabyte iPhone 5 goes for $99 up front, $579 in total, 32 gig, $199 initially, $679 in total, and the 64 gig goes for $299 up front or $779 in total.
All right, you BlackBerry diehards, good news. If you're in the UK, you can pre-order the BlackBerry Q10 at a number of carriers, including EE, O2, 3, and Vodafone. And then unlocked Q10 will run at about 580 British pounds, which is pricier than the touchscreen-only Z10, which costs 515 British pounds. The Q10, though, is free with a two-year contract that would run you about £35 per month. Delivery is expected at the end of April.
Q10 for free. That's interesting. Comscore released February smartphone market data for the United States yesterday afternoon. Android's share of smartphone subscribers dropped for the second report in a row to 51.7%. iOS jumped 3.9 points to 38.9%. Microsoft Windows Phone gained a tiny bit, going from 3 to 3.2%. BlackBerry dropped points to 5.4%, and Symbian remained flat at about a half percentage point. Rankings for device makers in the U.S. remained pretty much unchanged, with Apple at the top, followed by Samsung, both of which increased share at the expense of HTC, Motorola, and LG in that order.
Google, along with BlackBerry, Earthlink, and Red Hat, today appealed to the Federal Trade Commission and Department of Justice to take stronger action against companies like Lodesys, Intellectual Ventures, and other patent assertion entities That's a nicer name for patent trolls that they feel abuse patents for financial gain and have cost U.S. companies alone about $30 billion in 2011 and $80 billion when accounting for all costs, direct and indirect.
20-year-old artist Jennifer Pollock was arrested in Montreal Wednesday morning for posting a picture of anti-police street art on her Instagram feed. The art depicted police spokesperson Ian Lafreniere with a bullet wound in the head. Montreal police apparently believe Pollock acted with intent to harass Lafreniere and cause him to fear for his safety. Her trial date is set for April 17th.
Google regularly receives DMCA takedown notices from a number of parties, including TV and movie studios. In a move to be transparent, Google publishes these requests. But today, there's news that Google has received DMCA takedown notices from two studios to remove some previously published DMCA takedown notices. Both Universal Studios and Fox are asking Google to delete the published takedown notices, citing the DMCA. TornFreak.com thinks this is just the result of automated tools. I just can't wait for these new takedown notices to get published so this can go on forever in a loop.
Oh, and now that news feed's got taken down. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle. Do you want the new iPhone, the new iPad, the new Samsung Galaxy, the new HTC phone, maybe the new BlackBerry Q10? If you want a new phone, before you get the new one, or if you've already upgraded, get rid of your old stuff. You don't have to give it away. You certainly shouldn't just leave it moldering in a drawer if you're not using it. Find out what it's worth at Gazelle. It's the hassle-free way. You don't have to deal with listing stuff. You don't have to deal with all that craziness. It's an easy way to go to gazelle.com, tell them what device you have, find out what it's worth, and then send it to them. They'll get you paid fast by cash or by check, rather, or PayPal. Now, here's the thing. If you're saying, well, Tom, I don't know if I'm ready to commit, or I actually want to get the new phone and transfer all my data first. I can't sell it yet. Well, you can go get your quote because you lock it in for 30 days. That's the brilliance of Gazelle. They're going to say, look, it's worth this much today, and we'll honor that price for the next month, the next 30 days. So go to gazelle.com right now. Get an offer for your iPhone, your Samsung, your HTC or your BlackBerry smartphone, your iPad or other Apple products. Do it today because your gadgets may lose value every day that you wait. What's your iPhone, your iPad or your Android smartphone worth? Find out. Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com. Sell your used iPhone or Samsung Galaxy smartphone today at gazelle.com. We thank Gazelle for their continuing support of Tech News Today. Really do. All right. Joining us today, Kyle Wahlquist on Twitter made sure I didn't forget this week. Darren Kitchen from Hack5.org in the Hack5 studios. How's it going, Darren?
Oh, doing so well. Can't wait to get on the road. We'll talk about that later.
I know. You're just under a month away from hacking across America. We'll tell you a little bit more about that at the end of the show. Meanwhile, Facebook Home, we covered it during the show yesterday morning, and people have had a day to get used to the idea. Oh, Malik doesn't seem to like it. What is he saying, Sarah?
Yeah, so we did cover the announcement during the show, and it was basically just a lot of facts. What is it? How does it work? What does it look like? And says he was at the event, and he says there's a lot to take away from the whole thing. You know, one is that Mark Zuckerberg has become a pretty good public speaker, and the whole Facebook Home experience looks really nice, and people are actually giving it a pretty good initial first response. But he says, you know what this is? This is a huge privacy issue, and that's what we should be thinking about. He says, if you think about Facebook Home, it's a start menu for all of your app launches. So Facebook now can find out more easily than ever what apps are popular so that they can build clones, because that's what we know Facebook already likes to do. And at the very least know what apps you're launching and how many times per day. Not only that, but Facebook can track your every move. So you could check into Facebook and say, I'm at a coffee shop with Iaz. But even if I don't do that, Facebook can sort of start to notice some trends, right? If I'm always somewhere for a certain amount of hours during, I don't know, regular sleep hours, Facebook can eventually probably figure out where I live. They can build a more specific profile about me. So, hey, if I live, at the corner of 10th and Spring Street, I don't actually, that's fake. I sort of walk down the street often and probably at that coffee shop type of a thing. So this is stuff that I'm not actively sharing with Facebook that Facebook can put together. Whether or not you check in, Facebook can start noticing, you know, if your accelerometer speeds up at a certain point, well, maybe this is a running trail that you might take on a regular basis. Maybe that's something that you might be interested in. Certain fitness things could be marketed to you because Zuckerberg said yesterday that there will be ads on Facebook Home. I mean, make no mistake, a lot of this information that you could get from us would be perfect for Facebook's marketing and advertising teams. And also the whole idea that, you know, Android's so open and Android lets them build what they need and they don't have to build their own OS. O'Malik says, well, they're going to build their own OS. That's definitely what's going to come. This is sort of a stopgap measure. And because it's Android, Facebook can do whatever it wants on the platform. And that means accessing the hardware as well. So you've got these smartphones that can potentially get a lot of information about you. And Facebook, if you use that phone, if you're using Facebook Home, will be getting that information about you. Darren, what's your first reaction here? Do you think O'Malik's onto something? Is this overkill, or are these privacy issues that we really have to take seriously?
Okay, so the thing is, O'Malik is just realizing, and through Facebook, and hopefully that will bring this to kind of light and maybe more people will think about it, that all of this is already possible with your carrier, with your Android, with whatever your OS provider is, with Google, yeah. And so, of course, Facebook always gets a bad rap when it comes to privacy, and justly so. But, you know, Facebook could already do this if they wanted to by just rolling out a new version of the Facebook app. They don't necessarily need a home screen to do any of these sorts of things. They can have something, you know, they can set their app to be resident in memory and get all sorts of this stuff. And people will always just click, oh, yeah, sure, to those permissions anyway, because they've bought into Facebook. So if you're one of those people that's already bought into Facebook, this is just the norm. And if you don't like it, well, then quit Facebook.
Yeah, or don't buy a Facebook home phone.
Right.
I saw a response piece on the Next Web from Martin Bryant. It says, if Facebook Home will track my every move and serve me targeted ads, sign me up now.
Why?
Because in theory, his idea is if you're going to get stuck with ads and they're a reality in anything, if it's your social network, if it's your free music service or whatever the heck it is, it would be better if you have to deal with these ads, why not actually see the ads you want to see? Things that are targeted to you. Why should you, Sarah, get an ad for something that's located in Boise, Idaho? Well, that'd be much better for Jason. Why would that make any sense? So if you're going to bother with these ads at all, why not get that? Because even this morning, I was watching a YouTube video, and I actually was interested in the ad to the point where I didn't hit the skip ad button. And that's the real kind of hook you want to have in general. If you have to deal with these things, why not have them personalized?
I read that Martin Bryant story as well, and it really struck me that I agree with Martin and Ohm. Martin's saying, like, hey, Facebook says they're not going to use a lot of this data that is on your phone. And if they're not invading my privacy and they're just using the information that I'm giving Facebook for better ads, why is that a bad thing? And I totally agree with that. I think people freak out like, oh, my gosh, there's going to be ads. It's like, well, yeah, there are ads all over the internet on everything. And that's not a bad thing if you're not paying for something. On the other hand, Ohm's right. We can't trust Facebook. Facebook is constantly pushing the boundaries past our comfort zone on what data they use and making us slap them back. And now they have access to a treasure trove. Sure, they say right now they're not going to use GPS to locate us and figure out where we sleep at night. But when will they start doing that? Has become the question. And Facebook has abused our trust. Mm-hmm. We have that same issue with Google and Apple and everybody else, but none of those companies have abused our trust as badly as Facebook. So it does make people gun shy. I don't blame him.
Yeah, Ohm says in the last sentence of the article, Ohm writes, we need to ask our legislative representatives to understand that Facebook wants to go from our desktops and browsers right into our home, a place where we need to be private. And honestly, I don't buy the whole we need legislation to oversee Facebook, because you either agreed to it or you don't use the service. And, you know, they can overstep their bounds and then you just can leave. It's that easy.
I mean, that's the way to say it. Everyone has a point that says, well, there's other companies that can do this and the potential is already there. And this is, you know, a lot of freaking out over technology that already existed. But yeah, I mean, part of it is this is Facebook. Facebook is really good for asking for forgiveness after privacy breaches rather than asking for permission. And it really is just an awareness thing. You get a smartphone, maybe the HTC First is the first smartphone that you ever buy for your mom. And, you know, it's just we should all be aware of what these services are potentially getting from us. And then we can make informed decisions of whether or not we're comfortable with that.
All right, let's talk about some deals that Apple's been making. Probably one of the less hyped rumors is Apple coming up with a radio service, but it's been as persistent as other rumors like a wristwatch or a television. What are we hearing now?
Yeah, this story keeps coming and going, and CNET had a report that Sarah mentioned in the news fuse. It says that Apple's close to striking a streaming deal with two of the major music labels, Warner Music and Universal Music Group. Apple was going to be offering the music industry a better deal than Pandora because it's going to do revenue share of audio ads on the free service. Apple still needs to get Sony Music Group and as well as publishers on board with this. But Apple wants this to launch in the summer. That's what they've been telling labels, according to this report. And the label executives are pretty high on the concept because they think an Apple radio service will gain traction because it's Apple. Now, the service itself, there's really not a whole lot of details here. You'd be able to download a song through iTunes. CNET sources says that Apple's service most closely resembles Pandora. Doesn't say what exactly that means. No on-demand listening, but you'd be able to jump back to the beginning of a song if you wanted to. And the product would be tied to iTunes and be available on mobile devices. Sarah, from the tiny details, is there anything in this service that sounds compelling about this?
Well, I mean, what's compelling about it is Apple being able to be creative enough about making the labels happy so that they will want to enter into agreements and not, you know, be pushing back, which we've heard since the first rumors of this came out that, you know, Apple clearly wants something that's like a Pandora model, but it's not just easy to say we want to do this because you have to enter into negotiations and there's a lot of back and forth and there's a lot of pushback, and Apple likes to get the best deals possible for Apple. So yeah, I mean, I'm curious to figure out at what point a deal like this goes forward with a major label and what exactly the details are, because it's just the evolution of streaming music.
Darren, there's a bunch of companies out there trying streaming music in different ways. Pandora, Spotify, all kinds of things out there. But if Apple is behind this, could a service from them gain more traction faster than these other services?
I think you have the obvious stuff that could always be tied in with the OS, and therefore it's one less app that somebody else has to get. I kind of see Apple doing like a Me Too here. It makes sense, though. They're a public company. They got shareholders. Music's their wheelhouse. But yeah, aside from that, I don't feel like this would be any more substantial than them trying to do like a music social network built into iTunes.
Let's talk to that one person who used to be on Ping. Hey, Tom, when it comes to Apple doing this, if they do come out with the streaming service, is there anything that makes this different? It just seems like a checkbox feature. There's rumors of Google doing the same thing. Amazon's probably going to have one. If everybody has one, what could make this even worthwhile?
I miss Ping. Don't you guys miss Ping? I think what's really interesting about this to me is the fact that it's the music industry circling back around to the original nemesis, right? For years, they were fighting against the original deal with iTunes, saying iTunes is too dominant. We need competitors. We need to get out from under these. We need pricing control. Then the Spotify's and RDO's and subscription services came along, and it became, we're not making enough money off these services. They're not giving us enough royalties. This is not paying for us. And now, guess where they're headed back? They're headed back to Apple, the original partner, and saying, hey, you guys have an idea for making this worthwhile, making this make more money? And Apple's like, yeah, we'll cut you in on the ads. That's what we do. That's how we work. And so, yes, I think this is actually a big deal, because if the record industry wants it to succeed, instead of being in an uneasy relationship, like, you know, frankly, they are with most of these other subscription services, they will, in fact, promote this. They will go out and say, yeah, Apple iRadio, get behind it. We'll give you some free, you know, exclusives. We'll put some promotional marketing effort. And if that's one thing the recording industry does well, it's promotions, it's marketing. And those two together could be a force to be reckoned with. I would be nervous about this if I'm a Pandora or a Spotify.
Well, revenue share with Apple's advertising seems like a little bit trouble, because I believe they came out with iAds, not to be confused with myself. And that didn't do so well when it came to putting ads in applications that ran on iOS, although I could see Apple easily promoting the heck out of this, saying, oh yeah, our phones, our devices come with music, even though a number of phones have done that before. Apple's got a way of making people forget that Nokia had it or this other company had it. So maybe there's a chance, especially if they do have those willing partners that are willing to throw money at advertising.
Adam Orth is creative director of Microsoft Studios, and he took to Twitter yesterday, I guess after having a lunchtime conversation with some friends about the advantages and disadvantages of an always-on connection in video games. And he wrote on Twitter, sorry, I don't get the drama around having an always-on console. Every device now is always on. That's the world we live in. Hashtag deal with it. Now, after that, he went on to say some things like, sometimes the electricity goes out. I will not buy a vacuum cleaner, being, you know, trying to point out, like, well, all kinds of services go out. That doesn't stop us from buying things. Later on, he apologized after all the blowback, said it was just supposed to be a bit of banter between friends. He has now made his Twitter account private. Originally, Microsoft's press agency said, we're not really sure who this guy is. Then came back like, no, he's a good guy. He was just, you know, speaking off the cuff. He doesn't speak for Microsoft. This isn't Microsoft's position. However, if he's having this conversation, he works for Microsoft Studio. That's the game developer. Is this a tip-off that Xbox is going to be always on and that everyone should go buy a PS4 because it's not going to be always on? Or is this guy just discovering that Twitter is in fact public and people will read your tweets if you say something controversial and you're in a position like him? What do you think, Darren?
Well, okay, I don't buy that Adam Worth doesn't understand that he's a, you know, public figure that represents Microsoft. If you have a couple thousand followers, I think that's the barometer. I don't know. I think this is pretty standard fare for tweets, though.
And what do you think about always-on connections in a console? Is he right? Like, hey, you know what? Internet's around. Just deal with it. That's the way the video game industry works now.
Okay, so you either put the cart in front of the buggy you put the buggy in front of the horses or the horses in front of the buggy, but either way, something needs to happen. So if Microsoft goes always on, then they might learn a very important lesson about how large swaths of the country don't have, you know, the kind of service to sustain that. And then hopefully that will change services because then carriers need to do something about it, or they don't. And then it takes longer. I don't know. It's one of those things.
Do you think Ortha has a point here? Like, hey, you know what? Electricity goes out sometimes. Internet goes out sometimes. That's just the way of things. It shouldn't stop you from wanting to buy something. And everything's better when the internet's always connected.
I don't know if everything's better when the internet's connected to it. I mean, I think that whole, what was it, the Sims debacle for EA, where you could get the game, but you couldn't actually play it because it required that online connection. Video games for a long time were not online, and it's basically this older set of gamers like myself who remember playing a game, and the only way you had co-op mode is if you brought another person with you in the space. But since everything, a lot of these services are moving online and you're playing some of your friends that are located all over the country, sometimes you need that online component to make a game work. But it's in these, I think, somewhat increasingly rare cases where you just want to play a game by yourself or you want to practice or any of those things, you can't because there's some weird disruption. I think that's this small dying breed of gamer that's not going to really be around very much, because what we do is we game with people anyway. It's a social experience.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, no one complains that the online role-playing games out there require an internet connection because they understand, like, you can't do an online role-playing game without an internet connection. But it's the games like SimCity that don't seem to need a connection, that get forced a connection, that cause the controversy. And it's also bandwidth caps. People are saying, look, you know what? My particular ISP is still enforcing a, you know, 50 megabyte bandwidth cap, 50 gigabyte rather, bandwidth cap. Sarah, is this guy just being insensitive to everything?
Insensitive? I think he's being honest about how he feels. I don't quite understand, you know, how this would incite rage on Twitter. It sounds to me like if Adam Orth has enough pull at Microsoft that we might be led to believe that Xbox would be always on, or, you know, eventually. I don't know. I think he's, yeah, there's probably a little bit of a, you know, maybe he came out of a meeting getting, you know, feeling fired up and took to Twitter, and maybe it was sort of intended at a group of people. And yes, Twitter is a very public place. And so now you're taking your Twitter account private to take the heat off of yourself. But this is all a little blown out of proportion, I think. I do see what the drama is around having an always on console. But I also see Worth's point of view, too, that increasingly this is how it's going to be going forward.
I think that Orth probably isn't speaking for Microsoft, honestly. He really is just probably, it sounds like, having a conversation with his coworkers, and Microsoft's debating this internally is what it sounds like to me. But there are some really stupid ideas out there. For instance, to say that my Xbox must be connected to the internet to work would be ridiculous. Why should it be? I mean, yes, my vacuum cleaner requires electricity to run, but it doesn't need to be always connected to the electricity. And my little brush and pan don't need to be plugged in. There are things you can do with the Xbox that don't require an internet connection. And why would you cripple it from being able to do those things at this point? Yes, it's stupid to say you can't play an online role-playing game without the internet. I mean, it would be stupid to say I want to play an online role-playing game without the internet. But there are plenty of things that a console can be good at. And there are plenty of people in areas with low internet penetration who need to be able to use this without the internet, who won't buy it otherwise. And I think that that's what fuels a little bit of that rage, is these controversies like SimCity, et cetera. Let's take a break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional, great-looking website. You know about making galleries in there. You know how they resize the images for you so that your site looks great on all platforms. Those mobile responsive designs adapt and make your site look perfect, whether somebody's on a phone or a tablet or a desktop. And now they have an online store capability. That's right, new commerce solution that allows you to instantly create a store and start selling your stuff. If you're a store, and I've used stores as a great example of how you could go and use the free trial to improve your favorite store's website and then hand over the keys and say, here, now you've got a great design website. Now they could actually sell their stuff through that website. Powerful and flexible e-commerce solution integrated to work with all those great templates, fast merchant account setup, single interface for order management, all those tracking things, putting coupons up there. And it's included with the business plan subscription that starts at $24 a month when you sign up for a year, or $30 for the monthly plan. Squarespace gives you and your website the best mobile experience. As I mentioned, it's fast and easy to use. Your site looks great. They have wonderful social media integration. It's really easy with a few clicks to add dynamic content, and it's exceptionally well designed. These are award-winning designs that you can use on your site and customize to your colors and your layout. Squarespace is an all-in-one platform integrating all your website needs: domains, design, development, commerce, hosting, and 24/7 customer support. But you don't have to take our word for it. You can try it absolutely free, no credit card required. Sign up for a free account and start building your website. Then, if you decide to purchase it, use this offer code TNT4 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Don't forget about free domain registrations, too. If you buy that annual plan, you get a free domain name that's yours to keep. That's Squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT4. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Gartner's got some numbers out that don't look too good to Microsoft these days, Ayaz.
Yeah, research from Gartner is saying Microsoft's going to face trouble from tablets because the PC market is expected to decline. Gartner projected how many millions of devices will be sold out to the year 2017, and it's saying that Android devices would greatly outsell Windows. That would be on PCs, tablets, and phones. Windows would be closer to iOS/macOS in the amount of devices sold by 2017. And this is a quote from Gartner's Carolina Melancy. I can't say her name. Melancy, sorry. Winning in the tablet and phone space is critical for them to remain relevant in this shift. And according to The Guardian, per PC, Windows licenses generate 50% of its profits, and Office licenses almost all the rest. And then there's this great piece on Computer World summarizing and grabbing all of these other headlines saying, Microsoft is dead. Windows has expired, and people are freaking out saying the PC is going to be extinct and Microsoft will no longer be relevant. Darren, even if Microsoft doesn't own most of the OS market at that point in the future, does that really mean doom and gloom for Microsoft?
Absolutely not. No, Microsoft has actually been on the forefront of touch. If you look at it historically, with Pen Computing, with Windows CE, with Pocket PC, and it wasn't until the iPhone that they really started losing, as it were. But yes, they've had a rocky road. There's definitely a shift in the times, as we were just talking about, with always-on consoles. We're kind of in this weird kind of adolescent phase of the internet and computing right now, as everything kind of shifts towards that, and more people have tablets as their first computers. But I don't see Microsoft as, you know, being, as Gartner says, dead or anything like that. I think that they'll continue. They're so big, they will continue to grasp onto this and keep trying things. And that's the thing about Microsoft. They keep trying things and failing, and then they come out with something else. I mean, remember the Zune? It's okay if RT, with Windows RT is crap. They'll try again.
Tom, we've seen Microsoft move into the services business. The Office has moved from a piece of software that you buy to something you can subscribe to. It seems like Microsoft's taking steps to avoid this kind of issue. Does the PC operating system matter as much when it comes to Microsoft?
Well, yeah, it does. It may not. It's getting to the point where it doesn't. And that is death for Microsoft, because all of the predictions of death about Microsoft, all of the failures in products they've tried, they've all been underwritten to an extent through Microsoft Windows. I think Microsoft's saving grace is the enterprise. Right now, there still isn't a lot of headway being made against Windows in the enterprise. Windows servers, Windows on the desktop in the enterprise, that business is going to be strong for a lot longer than the consumer version of it. But in the consumer space, they do have something to worry about, because as people start to buy laptops, tablets, and phones and not desktops, laptops still have the domination by Windows, but it's being eaten away. It's being nibbled at. And tablets and phones, they're on the ropes with. So I don't think this is the death of Microsoft, but it is going to force that question of what kind of company Microsoft wants to be. And right now, they're more stable, arguably more successful, but definitely more stable as an enterprise company. And yet they still want to be a consumer company, and they desperately want to be seen that way.
And one of the crazier things that's actually happened with Microsoft at this point is they've successfully infiltrated the living room. The Xbox is doing really well. For 2 years, it's like the number one best-selling console for 26 months in a row. It's been pretty ridiculous. Sarah, do you think that if the Microsoft be looking at a pivot where they're just like, okay, yeah, we did software, but this is really our bread and butter. We're going to do Xbox first, and then the rest of these things follow.
Yeah, I mean, we always point to the Xbox as, well, let's not forget that Microsoft has been really, really successful with the Xbox. But, I mean, 2012 was supposed to be the beginning of Microsoft's tablet revolution, right? So we're into 2013, and things don't look that good for Microsoft, and the company is limping along. I think it would be safe to say, at least when you compare it to something like Android numbers. And for Windows to be compared to something like, you know, Mac OS in terms of devices sold is just such a pivot from what Windows has been for decades. I mean, Windows was the dominant software that everyone was using. You know, Microsoft enjoyed that. Microsoft was all over the place, not only in the enterprise but at home. And to turn into something that's, hey, this is a great company, provides a variety of hardware and software systems, but for more of a, I mean, almost like a niche thing. You know, you've got Microsoft in the living room, and then you've got Microsoft, goods and services for people who really like Microsoft stuff. That's not the Microsoft it used to be. So, yeah, they have to figure out what's next for them.
And I'm also curious about these projections. I mean, when Android came out it's for tablets, it wasn't exactly polished. It wasn't exactly ready, and it took a rev or two for it to be a proper tablet operating system. And I think with Windows 8, what Microsoft has done is that it's effectively, Microsoft knows that the tablets are the future. That's why we have this touch-first interface. And what we're seeing in the leaked blue, the Windows Blue, which is Windows 8.1, is a lot more things are coming to that start screen interface, bringing a lot of those settings and things right to that forefront. And I think it's going to be that iteration that's going to change a little bit. I don't think Microsoft's dead in the water by any means, but I think they're trying lots of different things, like Darren said, and they're probably going to be fine.
I think it's interesting that we're
having... Let's focus a little bit on the tablet marketplace. Got a couple stories today relating to that, Sarah.
Yeah, in fact, since we're talking about Microsoft, IDG News Service has noticed quite a few Windows RT cuts. If you look at Dell's XPS 10, it's now $449 for the 32-gigabyte model. That's $50 off of the original price. 64-gigabyte edition is $100 cheaper now. If you look at Asus's Vivo Tab RT, this is on Amazon, 32-gigabyte tablet now is retailing for $382. It launched for $600 just at the end of last August, so that's a huge cut. Newegg lists that same slate as being discontinued. There's no word from Microsoft as to, you know, what's really going on behind the scenes. But then the Lenovo IdeaPad Yoga 11 sells for $799 in a variety of places. It can now be found as cheap as $499. From Amazon. So in general, we're looking at a bit of a trend here, right? There have been rumors that, you know, is RT dead in the water? Is there really anything left? Is this the beginning of the end? Some of those rumors started sort of as quickly as RT became available. But at the same time, you've got price slashing on iPads as well. Best Buy has cut down totals for the iPad 3 by about 30% across all models. Now, the iPad 3rd gen is sort of that weird iPad that came out about a year ago and still has the 30-pin connector and, you know, was one-upped by the iPad 4th gen in the fall. So it kind of makes sense that that would be the model that you'd sort of want to clear out inventory on. At the same time, Best Buy says, well, you know, potential new models are coming. We know that they will eventually, so this just makes sense. But Walmart is offering discounts on iPad minis as well. For example, $329 iPad is now $299. And a spokeswoman for Walmart said, listen, we're not lowering the price of the iPad mini because there's a new model coming from Apple. This is just we're coming into Mother's Day and Father's Day and graduation season, so this is just one of these things that makes sense for us in order to move inventory. We're kind of comparing apples and oranges here when I say Windows RT tablets versus iPads. I mean, I guess it's good for consumers that we've got cheaper options, but does this signal some sort of a slowdown in tablet sales?
I think when it comes to the Apple price cuts, it's because a new line is coming out. When it comes to the Windows price cuts, it's because those devices weren't moving because they are confusing. They don't make a lot of sense to even people who are in the know when it comes to it. And like I was saying, comparing it to Android tablets a while ago, this first rev of tablets with this operating system, Windows 8 and RT, is not the best rev yet. I'm sure the next one's going to be a lot better. They need to clear out this inventory. And when it comes to the iPads, like I was saying, everyone is expecting a revision to that. And so you need to get this inventory out. And with those holidays as well, just get a bunch of people in the door and they buy other things because brick and mortar still isn't dead.
Darren, what do you think when you see these Windows RT numbers falling? Does it make you want to buy a Windows RT that much more tablet? Or is this just kind of desperation move?
It's kind of one of those things like the HP touchpad where, you know, if it got inexpensive enough, sure, why not? I'll pick up one of those. That'd be fun to play with. But otherwise, I see it as, you know, like Aya pointed out, if they're not selling as well, warehouse space is expensive. You've got to balance the overhead cost versus the sales price to get those things moving. And I wouldn't indicate this as an RT failure as much as just it not being as much of a success as they had previously predicted. And maybe they'll strike the balance in the next rev.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing here is a maturing of the market. I was thinking about this today. I am not excited about a new iPad. And I don't know if that's because Apple broke the rhythm where, you know, by coming out with that new iPad in the fall, I no longer feel like, oh, this is the newest one, so maybe I should upgrade. Or if it's just like, you know what, the tablet I have, I use a Nexus 7 and I use an iPad. They're fine. They're great for what I do. I'm not sitting there feeling like I need something else. And so I'm not sure what they could do to compel me to drive the upgrade. And that's the sign of a maturing market. I mean, smartphones have been dealing with that for a while. How do you differentiate? I feel like that's what we're seeing here in this market. Samsung is facing that, actually. Reuters reports today Samsung spending more on marketing for the first time than research and development. First time in 3 years, anyway, that's been true. And of course, we heard in the news views that they are expecting great profits, but it's the breaking the streak of five straight quarters of record profits. Rachel Lashford is an analyst at the research firm Canalys in Singapore, and said Samsung is lagging behind Apple in creating a new category. Now, granted, Apple hasn't created a new category since the iPad, but Samsung, she says, needs to come up with something new if they really want to forge ahead. Otherwise, they are suffering from that maturing market perspective. Samsung still spends more on research and development than Apple, though. And John Pashofsky from All Things D had a piece yesterday morning that Samsung seems to be wanting to create a platform. They're working with Intel on Tizen. They're working with Mozilla on a mobile browser. They've got a startup accelerator, a Silicon Valley R&D center, a sales and R&D campus, strategy and innovation center in Menlo Park, Sand Hill Road. So where is Samsung headed with all this? Sarah, do you have an idea?
Samsung is a fascinating entity to me. Where is Samsung heading? So spending more on marketing than R&D for the first time in a while. I think we've all seen that. I mean, I can think of Samsung ads. I can recall them really well. So it's working, right? And the Samsung brand is stronger than ever. What is the end goal here? Is it like we want to become a brand that is the most respected? We want to be more respected than Apple. We want to have a presence, certainly in Silicon Valley, which is something that, you know, up until, I don't know, when I heard that they were opening offices, I wouldn't have equated Samsung with really, you know, the sort of a California company, which again kind of puts it against Apple. But at the same time, I mean, it's a completely different company. They've got a ton of devices where Apple has just a few. They have different markets where they dominate Apple. And it's fascinating to me. I think the next couple of years, they're probably going to show whether or not they can get a foothold as far as, you know, their new R&D center in Silicon Valley and really continue to make waves here.
That seems to be the thing, right? Is they're trying to find that foothold, and whether it's reality or perception, they're trying to find a foothold to say, like, we are innovative. And immediately, when Reuters reports that Samsung is spending more on marketing than R&D for the first time in 3 years, a lot of people rush and go, ah, they're not innovating anymore. Ayaz, is that fair?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking about their Radio City presentation. That probably cost a lot of money. And that was not a good marketing thing. Just because they're spending more money doesn't mean they're doing the right things with that. And as far as R&D with Samsung, they make pretty much everything. They've transformed themselves from back in the 80s. If you had a Samsung product, that was the cheap, budget, kind of cruddy product. They've transformed themselves into a premium brand in pretty much everything they make. When it comes to a washer and dryer or your cell phone, Samsung's got a name that people actually respect. And they think, oh, that's going to be a good product because it has the Samsung name. And this idea of that Samsung's not innovating, chat room was blowing up saying, what about the phablet? Who thought that was going to work? Samsung's R&D just flat out says, hey, look, let's try everything in every size and somebody's going to buy it. That's what they figured out. And they've somehow made that work. While other companies are slimming down their lines, Samsung keeps building them out. All they need to do now is say, hey, look, we've got 8 million devices. Who wants to buy it? So let's market the heck out of this.
Totally feel you. I feel like Samsung has spent a lot of money on innovating, and now it's just time to cash in on their innovations. And if you look at the company's overall growth spike in comparison to the R&D, I'd say that it doesn't really look like a downturn. Also, I don't buy the argument that Samsung isn't innovating, isn't creating a category. First of all, like you said, the phablet, you know, and others have followed suit with note-like devices. And also, whoever said that was the rule, that suddenly, you know, electronics manufacturers needed to create a category. Apple didn't invent the smartphone, and nor did Samsung, and they're both doing really well, both making and marketing them.
All right, let's move on to the randomizer of dreams. Because scientists can now read your dreams. According to a Next Web article, scientists in Kyoto, Japan have built a dream reading machine. This is not some fly-by-night thing. They actually loosely predict the images that sleeping subjects have seen with an initial 60% accuracy rate. This was published in Science magazine. Smithsonian magazine wrote it up as well. It uses a combination of an MRI, computer modeling, and images from across the web to try to decode visual imagery. So it's a little bit of like speech training. They take MRIs, fMRI patterns of your brain, and then they do some things where they ask people like, okay, what were you seeing? And identify this web image and tell us which one is closest. Then subjects are monitored while asleep, and they try to say, okay, based on the MRI and what they were seeing before, let's see if what we think they're seeing now is right. And then they wake them up and go, is this what you're seeing? 60% of the time, they're right. Pretty crazy, huh?
Tom Z in the chat room says, Google brain image search. That would be great. It's like, I'm thinking of this thing. I don't know what it's called. And then you think about it and you wear your Google glasses that's attached to your brain. And
that's
boom.
Actually pretty cool. Yeah. You wouldn't even have to be asleep. But the idea of recording dreams. Being real.
I like the idea that it's, you know, 60% accurate, because you figure that coupled with if it's going to use something like Google image search as its algorithm for coming up with the imagery, you then factor in that accuracy and only good things are going to happen there. But I also see, like, if you look at the craze that is like the Fitbit with a Gear 4's alarm clock that tracks your sleep and stuff like that, it's like, dude, sign me up for the home MRI, because we all seem to be obsessed with tracking this kind of stuff. So tracking dreams, yeah, sign me up.
But yeah, I mean, and, how many times have you woken up from a dream and you're just like, that was really weird. Why did my brain go there? That's not me. I don't want any recorded evidence of
but
that.
Think of all the movies you could be the producer of.
I was about to say, think of all the DMCA violations you could have when you're dreaming of 16 Candles with Ayaz starring.
I've watched 16 Candles. I would like everyone to know that. I did watch that movie, and I found it hilarious.
Well, and Michael, you dreamt about it that night.
Anthony Michael Hall was in my dreams that night.
Yes, there you go.
Absolutely.
More details, please.
He was driving a car.
You know how you were talking about dreams that you just don't want to relive, Sarah? There you go.
Thank goodness we don't have a Twitch for dreams yet. Let's move on to the calendar.
The HTC One 64 gigabyte developer edition is starting at pre-orders today. Looking ahead to Monday, April 8th, the Chromebook Pixel with LTE is going to start shipping. Also Monday, Messenger is transitioning into Skype. There's a couple people around the office that are not happy about that. I've been hearing the mumbles and grumbles. And Microsoft is also ending support for Office for Mac 2008 on April 9th. That's next Tuesday.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a message from Fez in Montreal. You guys are talking about Microsoft getting out of the media operating system space to position the Xbox as the central consumption device recently. In Canada, Bell has been transitioning from its satellite service to Bell Fiber, which is a Motorola box that runs Microsoft's media room based on WinCE. It's IPTV with many useful features, but I could very much imagine future editions integrated with the Xbox. Thought you might want to know.
All right.
Got another email from Mike. Has two comments for us. The first one says, on the brick and mortar versus online shopping front, don't forget the social aspect of shopping. Going out, leaving your computer to shop with others. You know, the people watching, girl watching, eating junk food at the mall, etc. Number two, on the product placement in movies thing, one powerful aspect, which was not mentioned, the subliminal effect, which that's, I guess, true. I mean, that's the whole point.
That's
of
why so many
right?
people have bought this blue water bottle everywhere that I sell at my shop.
I don't know.
It
I don't buy
brand this. Identity.
You can eat junk food while shopping online. You can look at girls on the internet while shopping online. There's chat rooms. Why do we have to leave the house again?
Yeah, really. When I start online shopping using Facebook Home, I'll have all my chat head friends just kind of hovering over all of the stuff I'm already doing. It'd be like a party.
As you're frictionlessly sharing this data, like, you're going to buy that? No. And it'll keep popping up. Right. Like, I'm trying to buy this.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I first read this, my thought was like, oh, it's a good point. You'll want to have that social real world interaction. But you guys have convinced me. We can do that without leaving our house. Why would we ever need to leave our house? All right, that is it for this show. Darren Kitchen, thanks as always, and tell us about Hack Across America.
Well, speaking about leaving the house, that is exactly what I'm going to do for the next 6 months. Hack 5 is hitting the road, and we are going all across North America. Yeah, and we're going to be having meetups, going to be doing workshops at hacker spaces and doing talks, and it's going to be really a lot of fun, so we're going to get the community involved. Everything is at hackacrossamerica.com, so I encourage everybody to go over there and sign up, because the more people like sign up in different places, that's going to dictate where we go. Like, if Tom signed up around L.A., we'd have to go down to SoCal and hang out.
Well, that sounds like an interesting idea.
Yes.
I would like. So where do people track you? You've got a dashboard up, I know.
Yeah, it's awesome. The vehicle that I'm taking is completely kitted out with all this electronics and stuff. I might even do APRS. But there's maps, and you can watch live. I'm going to be streaming from the van. I'm going to have live maps that actually show, you know, where I've been, where I'm going, chat rooms, stuff like that. So it's all at hackacrossamerica.com. You'll find the calendar. You can sign up. You can watch the whole thing as it progresses. And then I'll be on Twit from all sorts of fun places with
cool.
good 4G connections.
I hope you do make it down here. I want to say
I will.
That.
Oh, no.
I'll
LA's
even leave
well,
my
Santa,
house.
I know Santa Barbara is happening, so... If Santa Barbara is happening, then L.A. will happen.
What's going to happen to the cat while you're gone for 6 months? Important things.
Yes. So there are a team of hackers back at the studio that will maintain that the cat, as well as I should probably mention that I say that the Hack Across America project is going on for 6 months. That doesn't necessarily mean that I won't be home for 6 months straight.
I see. Got it. Yes. All right. Good. That's all right. I feel like you're on top of it, and I wish you well.
He has to shower somewhere. So, HAK5.org or hackacrossamerica.com for Hack Across America. Don't forget, you can submit stories at our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. You could be responsible for one of the stories in the lineup, or at least help by voting, technewstoday.reddit.com. If you like a particular part of any episode, you can nominate it to be part of our best of at the end of the year, not just a Tech News Today, but any episode on Twit. Go to twit.tv/best of to do that, and we will be back next week. You can find us on the web until then. If you miss us so much, go to twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Until Monday, when Ewan Rankin from British Tech joins us. We'll see you then.